Oh, this is nice, isn't it? It's like the Oscars. Oh, only not quite so well dressed. Sorry. No. Okay, I'm going to tell you how I became a Christian. I became a Christian 19 years ago when I was 10. I was brought up in Middlesbrough, brought up in an ordinary home. We never went to church or anything like that. There was no Bible in the house that I was aware of. There was no prayers before mealtimes or prayers at bedtimes or anything like that. So we had no sort of anything, nothing about God at all. When I was 11, my parents split up, and a few years later, I moved to Manchester when I was 15, and my elder brother Charles joined the army. So I thought, well, I'll do that. I'll join the army. In fact, the real reason I joined the army was that the camp that they were going to send me to was in Harrogate. So I looked on the map, and Harrogate was halfway between Middlesbrough and Manchester. And my mum lived in Middlesbrough, and my dad lived in Manchester. And I thought, well, I can't be with them both, so I'll live in the middle, which is a stupid reason to join the army, right? Because once you've signed your life away, you're not going to see anybody. So I did that, and I was in the army for 6 years. And my elder brother Charles became a Christian. And I remember getting a letter off my dad telling me, you know, Charles has gone a bit weird. He's gone all religious. You know, he's got all connected to God. So just kind of ignore him if he has a go at you. So anyway, when I was 21, I was in the army, and I was actually working with the SAS. You don't get interviewed, by the way. They batter you a bit, but you don't get interviewed. And I started working with the SAS and attached to them, doing work with them. And then I was spending one night in Middlesbrough, and my brother was on leave as well. And we spent the evening together at my sister's house having a chat. Two brothers, you know, competing. You know, he's saying, we pray for people like this. I'm saying, we shoot people like this. You know, he said, well, you know, we read our Bibles like this. I'm saying, well, we hold our guns like this, you know. And I was due to go to Northern Ireland for 5 months to do some work undercover. And not under the duvet. That's a different type of undercover, but undercover. And my brother was obviously a bit worried about me. And he was telling me about Jesus and stuff, and it didn't really mean anything to me at all. And he said, would you like to go to heaven when you die? Which is a bit of a trick question, because it sounds good. So I said, yeah. And he said, well, if you want to go to heaven when you die, you've got to ask Jesus to come into your life before you die. So I said, okay, I'll do that just before I die. And just, you know, I left it at that. Anyway, I went back to the... I didn't die, by the way, when I went back in the army. And I left the army to get married to my gorgeous wife, Marion. Little plug for you, dear. And I left the army, and I got a job as a lorry driver because I couldn't get a job as a sniper, even in Middlesbrough. So I started working as a lorry driver and did that for a few years. Then when I was 26, I had an accident. I was driving an Arctic on my way to Glasgow, driving a 38-ton truck, and the brakes failed. And as the brakes failed, I was approaching a traffic jam. And I probably had, between me and this traffic, probably about the distance of this room, so I had a couple, you know, split second to think of things. And it would be a brilliant story if I could say to you that in that moment, I asked Jesus to come into my life, but I didn't. I just said, oh. Because when you think you're about to die, in a split second, you don't really have a lot of time. I mean, people say your life flashes before you a bit, and it kind of did a bit, where I suddenly thought of Marion and my eldest son, who was one, and my wife was pregnant at the time, and obviously that was a bit shocking. And I didn't die, you'll be glad to know, but I was seriously injured in that accident. I had my right leg amputated. If you don't believe me, you can see it afterwards, but it's a pound. Unless you're a student, and it's £5. And so what followed for me, obviously I'd been in the army and done loads of fitness things and stuff like that and loved running and stuff like that. So it was really difficult time for me. We had the euphoria, if you like, of, you know, thinking I was going to die and then not. Obviously that's quite a nice feeling. And but then years of trying to get used to having a false leg and struggling with that and thinking I was going to do okay but not doing okay and getting depression and stuff like that. Trying to get back into sport, and which I did quite well, and actually ran in the 1992 Barcelona Paralympics and won a bronze medal in the 400 metres. Yeah. I thought I'd pause long enough for you to applaud me. Thanks. I told you it was like the Oscars. And I got loads of compensation for my accident. I actually got 140 grand for losing my leg, which is not bad, actually, is it? I've got none left, by the way, so I can't help you. I just squandered it on silly things like expensive false legs, stuff like that. So I had great family, loads of money. Actually, I had a pretty good job by then. Competed in the Barcelona Paralympics. So on the outside, everything looked pretty good. But on the inside, I was a mess. I was totally depressed. I hated myself. I had all sorts of bad habits. I was a really angry person. I would swing between being okay one minute and really angry and violent the next. And I really struggled. And then in 1995, my brother Charles was diagnosed with cancer and given 3 months to live. They took him into hospital for a routine operation, but when they opened him up, they realised they completely misdiagnosed him, and he had terminal cancer. And I went down to Oxford, where I lived, to visit him, and he was totally unafraid. Now, when I was in Northern Ireland with the SAS, I seen soldiers going into situations which are really dangerous, and I know what real fear looks like. And my brother didn't have it at all, and that really shocked me. He wasn't just pretending, he was really unafraid. And the first thing I said when I walked in was, he said, before you say anything, he said, if it's my time to die, then so be it. You know, but if Jesus heals me, then, you know, I'll be chuffed a bit. But, you know, if it's my time to go, then that's it. And I just thought, what are you on about? And I went back to the place where I was staying on the night after chatting to him. And I laid in bed and I was thinking about my brother and about his life and about my life and the mess that I was. And then I remembered what he'd said to me 16 years before. If you want to become a Christian, ask Jesus to come into your life. And I didn't know anything other than that one sentence. I'd never read the Bible. I'd been to his church a few times to see his daughters get married, and I'd stand at the back of the church and he'd be at the front singing and waving his hand in the air. And I used to think, who's he waving at? No one's waving back. It's really embarrassing. People would say, is that your brother? And I'd say, no, I never met him. He said, you look very like him. So it's just a coincidence. But in that little room on my own in the dark, it didn't seem quite so stupid. So I lifted my hand into the air and said quietly but out loud, Jesus, come into my life. And got a bit more confident. And this is sounds like a joke, but this is absolutely true. I remember thinking, was it his left hand or his right hand? So I put the other hand up just to be sure and said a bit louder, Jesus, come into my life. And then when I got a bit more confident, I lifted both hands. Jesus, come into my life. I totally changed. I mean, in seconds. I it's very difficult to explain, but it's like in one moment, I wasn't sure whether there was a God or not, and I wasn't that bothered. And the next moment, I was absolutely convinced that God really existed, and that and I wasn't in a relationship with him, and I knew I'd done things wrong, and I said, sorry, I thought about the Bible. I said, sorry, I've never read your book, stuff like that, you know, and asking him, you know, well, just saying sorry. So I'd think of something bad that I'd done, and then say sorry, and I'd feel really good. So I just did that all night, because I was 37. I'd done a lot of things wrong. I woke up the next morning, leapt out of bed, fell over, got back up, put my leg on. I was totally changed. I came downstairs, and one of my sisters said to me, what's happened to you? And I was a bit confused, but I said, I think I believe in God. I mean, I knew absolutely I did believe in God, and she looked a bit confused. My mother actually said, oh, no, not another one. And I came home, and I was shocked by what had happened to me because, you know, we all know ourselves. Nobody knows us like we know ourselves. And when you change yourself, and I'd tried to change myself a lot over the years and really failed miserably, but I totally changed, and it wasn't me doing it. I came home. My wife was a bit shocked. She always says that I kind of went away to visit my brother, a cross between Rambo and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and came back a cross between John the Baptist and Cliff Richard. And a year later, I was still Cliff Richard. It was just amazing. And I felt really good about that. So I just want to recommend to you, those of you on Alpha, just a couple of things. One is, Jesus never lets anybody down. You're not in any danger in coming to know Jesus. And when you ask Jesus to come into your life, he does all of the work. He changes us. It's not like loads of stuff we have to do. We just have to be willing to let him do what he wants to do in our lives, and I totally recommend him to you. So thanks for listening.
On the podium.
Yeah, thank you. Fantastic. Wasn't that great? what's the chances that both the speakers on your Alpha course have both been in the SAS and ran in the Olympics? None. So tonight, some of you are a little bit twisted at your neck. If you want to turn around and face this way, if you want to move your chairs, you're really welcome, because I'm going to speak for about 4 hours. No, I'm not. I'm just going to speak for a short time. When we first started running the Alpha course quite a few years ago, one of the first things Stuart did when he became a Christian was come on an Alpha course. And I could tell by chatting to him the first time I met him, took him back to our house. I thought, this guy tells a good story, he'll make a good speaker. And he has done. It's fantastic. We've run the Alpha course for quite a few years. I was just trying to do it in my head, the maths. I've seen at least 2,000 people face-to-face do an Alpha course. And I've never met anyone who's regretted it. Well done for coming tonight. This few weeks could definitely change your life for the better forever. I can say that with confidence. Well, firstly, because I'm a Christian myself, and what happened to Stuart happened to me in a bit of a different way, of course. Everyone's different. But I've also seen it happen through the Alpha course for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. You might be like most people. You just don't know about God, or just not bothered. Most of us aren't. Why should you be? I wasn't at all. I was brought up sort of church go. We were from a Catholic family, and I went to a Catholic school. And for me, if you mentioned like the church or Christianity or God and stuff, it just seemed totally, totally boring. I'd look at people who were involved in church, priests, vicars, nuns, I don't know, teachers, and I just thought, death? You know, just utter boredom. And I thought it was totally, to be honest, I was going to say I thought it was untrue. I didn't know whether it was untrue or not. I probably did believe in God a bit, in a God, in the God that I was told about when I was a little kid. But it wasn't relevant to me. He wasn't relevant to me at all. If you said, do you believe in God? I probably would have said, yeah. And second, so what? I was a punk rocker. It was the 1970s. Anyone remember the 1970s? Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten had just sang God Save the Queen. We were all fastening our school blazers with safety pins, and we were convinced there was going to be a nuclear war in the next few days. It was the 1970s. And I was not interested in God and not interested in Christianity, convinced that it was boring. Whether it was untrue or not, I didn't really care, but definitely that it was totally irrelevant. What a shock I was in for. What a shock I was in for. I was only 17, actually, when I became a Christian. But a friend of mine, a fellow punk rocker, who knocked around in our gang outside our shop, we ran a shop and we lived in a flat above it. And we used to knock around outside this shop with a gang of my mates every night. One night, I noticed he'd been changing a little bit. He seemed a little bit milder, happier, more at peace. And one night when all the other lads had gone, he stood on the bottom step of our flat and said, Marty, do you think it is the end of the world? Do you think there is going to be a nuclear war? And I thought, oh, he's took too many magic mushrooms. And he said to me, I've been reading the Bible. I've been reading about Jesus. Marty, have a read for yourself and find out. Do you know what? There wasn't any Alpha courses those days. I wish there was. It would have made it a lot quicker and easier for me. But it did spark something off in me. I knew he'd changed and I couldn't deny it. I didn't like it. It threatened me. I turned the gang against him, actually, and started mocking him, mainly because I was scared and threatened. See, if I read about Cliff Richard in the newspaper, it's just a joke. Christians. But when there's one near you, it's not a joke. It's not very comfortable. My mate, I'd grown up with him. I was in junior school with him and senior school with him. I knew he'd changed, and I couldn't push that off easy. This punk rocker pal of mine had read his little New Testament, his little Gideon's New Testament we'd been given at school, and had got on his knees in his bedroom one night and had prayed the first prayer of his life. He said, Jesus, if you're real, prove it to me. A bit like you prayed that night, Stu. And he began to change, not as dramatic as you, but he began to change. And he challenged me. and I began to seek. So it was a massive shock to me when I actually realized that there was a real God who loved me, that Jesus was real, he wanted a relationship with me, totally satisfying relationship with me. That was 30 odd years ago when I was 17. And I honestly can recommend him to you. I want to encourage you to come, whatever you think about yourself or God, honestly, it's at least worth the next few weeks. Don't give up on this. Try. Of all the courses you're going to do, you know, how to make your own pasta, cooking with a wok, I don't know, whatever you're going to do in your life, God is at least worth a few weeks of this. And I strongly encourage you to come and make your own mind up. Find out if God is boring, untrue, irrelevant, or if he's what Jesus said. This is what Jesus said. Rather than boring, untrue, and irrelevant, Jesus said of himself, actually, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Wow, it's quite a shocking statement. No one's ever claimed that. No prophet, no religious leader in any religion or anyone has ever claimed to be the only way. I mean, it sounds offensive, doesn't it? But this is what Jesus said. I'm the way. I am the truth. I am the life. He said, I am the way. That is not boring. That is not irrelevant. I've lived long enough now to know most people do not know the way. Most people have absolutely no idea why they're on this planet, or where they're going, or where they're at in the scheme of things. They just drift. When I first started speaking, I often spoke in schools and kids' schools and colleges and sometimes universities. Only sometimes, because I've only got one O-level and that was in art and it was a C. But anyway. And you know, you ask a little kid, what do you want to do with your life? And if most of the time it's just fantasy. What do you want to do with your life? Be a boxer. Okay. Or be a priest. Or, you know, they're just making it up. It's a little kid's way of saying, I don't know. They get a little bit older and they're a bit more sensible. You say, what do you want to do with your life? And they say, I don't know. That's the truth. Then they get a little bit sophisticated. Oh, well, they become teenagers then, don't they? And you say, come on, what do you want to do with your life? And they say, get off my back. Get off my case. That's a teenager saying, I don't know. Then they go to university. And as they're finishing uni, you ask them again, what do you want to do with your life? And they say, I'm keeping my options open. Which is an educated way of saying, I don't know. People aren't doing their dream jobs. People aren't married to their perfect partner that I've looked for all my life. People aren't happy. They're not totally satisfied with life. They drift in. Hardly anyone really chooses all the time. No one chooses all the time. And often we make bad choices. We choose the way for ourselves. And it's a mistake. We back out. Or we break our hearts over our decisions. We don't know the way. And do you know something about life? If you get lost, you don't know the way. I'll tell you something. I'll tell you what you do if you're an adult. You speed up. If you're a little kid and you get lost, it's all right. You've got sense when you're a little kid. Have you ever been lost when you're a little kid? You know what you do? You stop and you cry. That's called wisdom. That's a sensible thing for anyone to do. If you're actually lost, the most sensible thing to do is stop and cry. And someone comes up to you and says, have you lost your mum, love? Come to the checkout and we'll find your mum. But when you're an adult, you're too cool for that. If I get lost, before the days of sat-navs, we used to travel all over the place. We were always lost, me and Stu, travelling from one city to another, speaking. We go from one city to another, absolutely lost. And I tell you, when you realise you're lost, you put your foot on the floor. I don't know why, you just do. You just start driving faster and faster. You've got to get to the next junction, the next roundabout, the next signpost. You speed up. That's exactly what people do in life. You just get your head down and keep busy because you don't want to think about the fact that you haven't got a clue where you're going. Like the true story of the airline pilot who got hopelessly lost, this young pilot, going over the Atlantic. And his friend eventually he was spotted by a radio tower in South America. And they said, "Flight B-17, where are you headed?" And he replied honestly, he said, "I haven't got a clue, but I'm making record time." And that's like most of us. I'm booting through, but I don't exactly know where I'm going or why or who I am. Actually, that doesn't have to be the case. Somehow, it's a bit of a mystery, but it's a fact. Connection to this Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus, connection to him shows you where you are, who you are, where you're going, and why. That's what he meant when he said, "I'm the way." I'm the way to have a relationship with God that will totally satisfy you. That will totally satisfy you. People are not satisfied, no matter how many flat screen tellies we get. And whatever new car you get next, it won't bring you lasting happiness. Many people think that money is the great cure-all. And if I win the lottery, but think about it for a moment. If that was true, then the richest people would be the happiest. Isn't that logical? The richest, the most wealthy place to live in this country is Esher in Surrey. That's where most millionaires and multimillionaires live. It's also got the highest divorce and suicide rate. Money doesn't satisfy your soul. Only God can fill your soul. No amount of pleasure, no amount of sex, no amount of the next man will be perfect. The next relationship will do it. But I love her, but it won't last. And even if it does, she can't fully satisfy you for one reason, guys. She's fantastic, but she's got one flaw. She's not God. And neither's he. Only God can fill your soul and satisfy your heart fully. Jesus, how do you get that? Jesus. He said, "I am the way. I'm the way to that." He also said, "I am the truth." Like I said earlier about myself, I didn't care whether it was true or not. I didn't know whether it was true or not, but I wasn't particularly bothered. I used to think what loads of people think, which is, well, if it's true for you, that's nice for you. Just don't bother me. But actually, that's not very logical either. It's either true or it isn't. And if it's true for, you, it's actually true. And then I'm missing out on something. Another thing people often say is, well, if you sincerely believe it, then, you know, that's good. But what if you're sincerely wrong? You can be sincere about something, doesn't make it right or true. You can sincerely believe something and be miles off. Those guys who ran around Paris shooting people in the head sincerely believe that they're doing that for God. They're sincerely wrong. Jack the Ripper said he believed God told him to kill prostitutes. He was sincerely wrong. Adolf Hitler believed that blonde hair and blue-eyed people should rule this world. He sincerely believed it. He was sincerely wrong. Well, that's okay for you, but actually, it isn't okay. It's wrong. What's right and what's wrong? Sometimes, and that's extreme, but most of the time, you know, being wrong isn't that dramatic. It's just embarrassing or dangerous. I went into India once, flew into Bombay Airport. I had to get to the internal airport and fly down to Bangalore. I was renting a car, and I was absolutely convinced that in India, people drove on the right-hand side of the road. Oh, hang on. Did I get that wrong? They drive the same as us, don't they? What's that? Right. Left. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Anyway, do you know what? I was sincere in that belief, absolutely convinced that in India, like most parts of the world, you drive on the right. However, like a very few countries in this world, and like us, they drive on the left. I was corrected before I set off. Good job. I would have been dead. I would have set off into Bombay in the middle of the night on the wrong side of the road, sincerely believing I was right. When I drive down the M1, I often think about that air crash that happened. I don't know whether you remember that plane that came down on the embankment of the M1 a few years ago. Everyone died. It's a terrible shame. They set off to go to Florida from Heathrow Airport. Pretty quick, they realised one of the engines was on fire. Now, these days, with those modern jets, that's not a massive problem. They're designed to fly on one engine. So the pilot shut down the wrong engine. They didn't know. They didn't realise that they'd shut down the wrong engine and were flying on the burning engine. They were coming down to East Midlands Airport, and just before they came to the runway, they needed a bit more oomph. There was nothing there. They came down too early. They died. Do you think they were sincere when they switched off that engine? You betcha. But sometimes being sincere doesn't help you. You need to be right. When it comes to the big questions of life, like, how should I spend my life? Is there a God? What does happen when you die? You need to find out from an expert. Jesus said, I'm the expert. He said, I am the truth. The truth? The truth about what? The truth about everything. The truth about you. The truth about life. The truth about God. He didn't say, I'm the religious section in the library. He said, I'm the whole library. When you get to know me, you get to know reality. Jesus was saying, and I know it's cheeky, but he was saying it. He was saying, out of all the different religions and ideas in the world, I'm the right one. Wow. That's what he was saying. I am the truth. That's a big statement. Jesus said, I'm the truth. And lastly, he said, I am the life. Wow. Would anyone like life to the max? Because that's what Jesus offers. In fact, the word he used is a Greek word, zoe, which means that. It means fullness of life. I'm life to the max. I'm life worth living. I'm life with a capital L-E-F-E. I am the life. That's what he was saying. And it also means multicoloured, that word. Multicoloured. Does anyone remember black and white tellies? Me too. We were a real TV family. I grew up in Billingham, and I can't remember having a single meal around our family table when I was a kid. Every single meal was in front of the telly with a glass of milk, and we just lived for that telly. We absolutely loved it. Coming from school, and I'd be there till we got sent to bed. It was little, roundy screened, and black and white. And I remember the day we got our first colour telly. It was absolutely awesome. It was massive as well. It was a 26-inch, massive, big wooden beast that my dad rolled. I was 8 years old, I remember it. Rolled it into the room. Look at this, son. It had buttons like that sticking out. And he plugged it in, switched it on, and we had to wait for it to warm up. Do you remember that? You have to wait for the, I don't know what was warming up, but you had to wait for them to warm up or something. It's just warming up, son. And it blinked a couple of times, and then, colour telly. Oh, there was no going back. The ball was white, the pitch was green. It was awesome. No going back to black and white. It's like that when you become a Christian. It is. Jesus said, what I offer you is life. Whose life? Your own life, but different. The difference between life in black and white and life in colour. There's a different dimension to life, a spiritual dimension. And until that's born in you, honestly, you're living life in black and white. You're still you. You'll always be you. God made you to be you. He likes you. But you spiritually alive is a very different you to you spiritually dead, like Stuart explained. That's true of everyone. Jesus said, I'm the life. You plug into me, you get this quality of life. Absolutely awesome life and eternal life. He promises people who come to him, reach out to him, the gift of eternal life. Jesus said, "He who believes in me and lives will never die." Someone said, "A Christian doesn't die, they just change address." Jesus offers that as a free gift. How can he do that? Because he bought that for us when he died on the cross. When Jesus died on the cross, and we'll explain this in detail throughout the course, when Jesus died on the cross, he was paying the price for you and me, paying for all the wrongs and sins we've ever done, so we can receive the good stuff that was due to come to him. It was an exchange. When I was a kid, there was a butcher in Great Ayton. The butcher's shop's still there, you can see it. When I was a young lad, about 12, one winter, there was a butcher working in his shop in Great Ayton. It was snow on the ground, and as he was working, serving people, he was looking out of the window, watching a little girl who was walking, some of you might remember this, walking along the bank of the river, the other side of the river. And he kept serving people and watching her because she was near the edge. And as he served someone else and looked, she was gone. She'd slipped into the river. He made a decision in that moment that was going to change his and her life forever. He jumped over his counter, ran across the road, ran across the little bridge, ran along the side of the river. Some other people had seen as well in the car park and came running behind him. And without hesitation, he jumped straight into the freezing water and swam just a few feet, grabbed this little girl who was drowned in, and saved her life. He picked her out, brought her to the edge of the river and passed her up to other people. As he did, he had a massive heart attack and died. He laid down his life for that girl. I often think about her because she'd be about my age. And I just wonder what she thinks when she drives through Great Ayton. Wonder if she still lives around here. Wonder if she's got kids. I bet she can't drive through without shedding a tear. I bet she can't drive through without telling her kids over and over again about the man who died so that she could live. When Jesus died on the cross, that's what he was doing for you and for me. He was getting into our mess to get us out. And becoming a Christian is experiencing that lifting out of all the hurt and mess of life. Some of you in this room have been massively hurt by others in life. Jesus can heal it. He can. He does it all the time. We watch it over and over. Some of you have hurt others. Jesus can forgive you for it and heal you of it, of the pain of that as well, and help you to forgive yourself. But most of all, the most awesome thing is actually starting a relationship with God. The best thing about Christianity, surprise, surprise, is Christ. The best thing about Christianity is Jesus himself. For me, I've been a Christian 30-odd years now, like I said at the beginning. To wake up every morning knowing I'm not on my own, no matter what I've done the day before, it's forgiven. No matter what I'm facing today, and I'm just a normal person with a normal family, I have problems too. Whatever I'm facing, I'm never facing it alone. I have God and Jesus with me. I have help and wisdom and resources that I never would have had. Life's hard enough as it is. Sometimes I look and think, how do people do it? I often think this, actually. Driving through Teesside Park, walking from the shops, I look at some people and I think, some people you can just see, they're broken-hearted. And I honestly think to myself, because I've lived most of my life with God, how do people survive without God? But somehow we do, in black and white, limping along with broken hearts. But we don't have to. There's an alternative. Guys, thank you for being awesomely patient tonight. And I want to encourage you just to come every week and give God a chance. Open your heart. Begin to pray. Maybe you've never prayed in your life yet. Pray in the car on the way home if you're on your own, or if you're with someone who doesn't mind. Pray before you go to sleep tonight. Say what my buddy said. Jesus, if you're real, prove it to me. And I promise you, he won't fail you. Now listen. Normally, at this point, we go into small groups for half an hour. And we'll do that every week. You'd be just staying around your table. Well, we'll have a coffee break, actually, and a loo break, because I bet you're dying to go to the loo. And after we've had a coffee and a loo break, we come back to the tables, And then you're free to chat and just discuss anything you want, any questions you've got about Christianity, any objections, any, you know, you might be really angry with God for what's happened in your life. That's fine. You can say anything you want and discuss anything you want. That's what normally happens. But tonight, we're just going to chill, play some music. You can chat to people. And I just want to encourage you again, if you want to come next week and keep going with the course, what would help us, and it's not absolutely necessary, so you can just turn up if you want, but it would help us just in terms of how much food and stuff to do, if you could put your name on the form and just let us know you're coming, that would be a massive help. Thank you. You're absolutely gorgeous. And we'll see you next week, hopefully.